Podcasting from the heartland of America in the state of Missouri, this is Recovering Faith, a show about increasing or regaining faith, trusting God when it doesn't appear to make sense to do so, and coming to Christianity from a non-Christian or pseudo-Christian worldview. I am your host, Gene Curl, and I wholeheartedly welcome you to this show. Welcome to this, the 9th episode of Recovering Faith Podcast. This is the concluding episode of the series, Why I Don't Trust God. This episode is called, I Don't Trust God Because I Foolishly Think I Know Better Than He Does. Have you ever had one of those moments where you saw something go down and said to yourself, if I were God, I would have done it differently, or something to that regard? If the answer is yes, then there have been times when you thought that you knew better than God. Some people doubt the goodness of God, or doubt God altogether, because they foolishly think they know more than God does, or because they think they know better than God does how to handle some situations. I admit, there have been times when I have thought that I knew better than God about a specific situation, and I was upset when God followed His plan instead of mine. At the time, I was sure that my plan was so much better. Because we don't have a clear picture of the future, we have preconceived ideas of how life should go. And when it doesn't go the way in which we plan, we get discouraged and we question God. Some of us are single longer than we wanted to be and question God. I myself am guilty of charge. Some of us want children and can't conceive after years of trying, and the adoption fell through for the 10th time. And we either think that God is cruel and doesn't love us, or that He somehow is negligent in His duties toward us. Abraham in the Bible had all but given up hope of ever having children because both he and his wife Sarah were old. When Abraham was 75, the Lord promised him that he would be the father of many nations. When Abraham was 85, he still had not had a child, and he accused the Lord of failing to keep his promise. And thinking that he was about to die, he was about to give his inheritance to Eleazar of Damascus, his chief servant. From the time the Lord made his promise to Abraham to the time Isaac was born to Sarah was 25 years. 25 years. Most of us can't bear to wait 1 year for something. And Abraham and Sarah waited 25 years. It was tough for Abraham and Sarah, and they didn't always act in a manner in which they should. But the Lord fulfilled His promise in His time, not theirs. Ecclesiastes tells us that there is a time and a season for everything under heaven. From other passages, we learn that God's ways are higher than ours, and that His time is not ours. If we ask for something and say we want or need it right now, our right now is not the same as God's. It says in some places in the Bible that an hour of our time is 1,000 years to God. So if we ask for something and we tell God we need it right now, and we get it 25, 30 years later, and we say, but God, I need it right now. Well, God would say, well, I did give it to you right now. So, we've got to realize that God's time is different than ours, and God doesn't give us things according to our timetable. He gives it to us according to His. When Isaac was still a boy, the Lord wanted to challenge Abraham's faith and asked him to sacrifice Isaac, his only son, or at least his only son with Sarah. God knew that He would send the ram that got caught in the thickets. Now, if you're not familiar with the Bible, after Abraham and Sarah had waited all these years to have a child, and finally they had Isaac, and then the Lord told Abraham that He wanted him to sacrifice Isaac, so Abraham took Isaac up on the mountain, and he said, Father, where is our sacrifice? And Abraham said, the Lord will provide us a sacrifice. And so he tied Isaac up and put him on an altar and was about to stab him when a ram got caught in the thickets. And so he took the ram and slaughtered the ram and sacrificed the ram instead. Now, before God ever told Abraham to sacrifice Isaac, he knew he was going to send a ram and that Abraham wouldn't have to sacrifice Isaac. He knew that Abraham would be faithful and do whatever he asked. But Abraham didn't necessarily know that. I sometimes think that it was to prove to Abraham that he had enough faith. We all say that we'll do a certain thing in a certain situation, but until we're in that certain situation, we don't actually know for sure. Jacob, Isaac's son, fell in love with Rachel, and he arranged with Laban, her father, to work 7 years in exchange for her hand in marriage. Jacob faithfully worked for Laban for those 7 years, but when it was time for him to get married, Laban pulled a fast one. He decided that it wasn't right that Rachel, the youngest daughter, get married first, and so he worked it out in the dark so that Jacob was tricked into marrying Leah, Rachel's older sister. When Jacob realized that it was Leah and not Rachel, he confronted Laban, and Laban told him that he had to marry off the older daughter first. But after the wedding week was over, if Isaac would agree to work another 7 years, he could go ahead and marry Rachel. It took 14 years for Jacob to get to the position he thought it would only take 7 years to get to. If God is making you wait for something, you're in good company. We all question God sometimes and think our wisdom reigns superior. Some of the time, we know full well that we think we know better than God on an issue. But most of the time, I think, we don't consciously realize that we are placing our intelligence and wisdom above that of God. We often rationalize that we trust God in all things, we just know that this thing could or should be done differently. In Romans chapter 1, verse 22, it says, "Although they claim to be wise, they became fools." And if you've ever seen the movie Forrest Gump famously said that his mother said, "Stupid is as stupid does." Well, thinking our limited and finite minds are smarter than an infinite and eternal God is pretty stupid. When we become educated, we think we are wise, but in some ways we're actually fools. A lot of people learn their way out of faith, but true knowledge understood does not contradict God. It is evidence of Him. There is often a difference between intelligence and wisdom. Worldly learning, while it can be extremely useful and beneficial, is not the end of all things, and if it's not placed into the larger whole, it can give us a distorted and unrealistic view of the world. Knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing not to put it in a fruit salad. Or another way of saying it is, intelligence is knowing that those genes do, in fact, make your wife look fat. Wisdom is knowing better than to say so. Two women, the Bible says, who were prostitutes, came before King Solomon with a dispute as to whose child the infant brought before him was. One woman's child died when she accidentally laid on it during the night and smothered it. So during the night, after she accidentally smothered her own child, the other woman was still asleep, so she took her dead child and put it in the other woman's bed and took the live child with her. When the other woman woke up, she realized that the dead child wasn't her child because, well, not all kids look the same. And so they took it before King Solomon. After King Solomon heard both of their cases, he asked that a sword be brought to him, and he said that he was going to cut the baby in two and give each of them half. Well, one woman was perfectly fine with that. The other woman, she fell down on her knees and cried and begged Solomon to give the baby to the other woman and even said the baby wasn't hers. So King Solomon said, "That is the true mother. Give the baby to her." Now, King Solomon, he was wise enough to know who the mother was without doing all this. Or he was intelligent enough to know who the mother was. But he was wise enough to show who the mother was in such an indisputable way that the woman who falsely claimed to be the mother could not dispute it. You see, Solomon knew that the true mother would do anything to save the life of her child, even if it meant that she would never see the child again. How many times have we forgotten that God's timing is not our timing, and we get upset when things don't happen when we think they should? When we pray for something and don't get it according to the timeline that we had in mind, we freak out and sometimes even get angry with God because we think that we know better than God. And the plan that we had is or was better than the plan that God has for us. When I was in my late teens, I fell madly in love with this young lady. But she wouldn't give me the time of day. And one day she gave me the dreaded, "You're a nice guy, and any woman would be lucky to have you, except me, of course. I look at you like a brother," speech. I prayed for years that she would change her mind, and all I accomplished was a lot of wasted time and wasted opportunities because I would not seriously date anyone else because I wanted to be available when she finally changed her mind about me. Nearly 20 years later, I see that I would have been better off to just move on and instead of praying for something God did not have planned for me, to pray that when I met the person God had planned for me, that I would be that I would know it, and that I would be patient while I waited for it, even if it took a long time. I don't think I have ever consciously prayed for patience because I know how it would be achieved, by waiting an agonizingly long time for something I felt I could not live without. I think of it like the story of the little boy that asked his elderly neighbor who used to be a weightlifter how to get muscles, and the old man agreed to help him get muscles. He had him do chores around his house, and after months and months of sawing and cutting and chopping wood and doing other hard labor, the boy angrily approached the man and asked when he would show him how to get his muscles. The old man had the boy flex his arms and then pointed out that he already had his muscles. Muscles earned by hard work. The muscles didn't come the way the boy thought they would, the easy way. But the old man kept his word, and the boy got his muscles. Sometimes, we really do have to be careful what we ask for. I can't count the number of times that I've been disappointed because I tried to impose my time schedule on God. The God of the universe doesn't break a sweat because he hasn't met my deadline. And I'm convinced that sometimes he even makes me wait longer to teach me patience. A lot of anxiety is caused by the fact that we can't see all things, and we can't see how things will turn out. And from an incomplete set of data, we come to a wildly incorrect conclusion. As Gandalf said in The Lord of the Rings, even the wisest can't see all ends. Now, be warned. The following story has more than a few spoilers for Avengers Infinity War. So if you haven't seen it yet, and if you are planning on seeing it, you may want to close your ears or fast forward the next probably 2 minutes or so, because there are definitely spoilers. So here we go, full speed ahead. In the movie, Infinity Wars, for those of you who haven't seen the movie and you're not into Marvel, according to the movie theology, when the universe was created, it also created five infinity stones. And if somebody were to collect all five infinity stones and have a way to harness their power, that they could control the universe. Well, Thanos, who is the villain of Infinity Wars, his mission is to destroy at random rich, poor, rich and poor, privileged, unprivileged, everyone alike. He wanted to kill half of the population in every planet on the universe. And the reason he wanted to do that is so that those who were left would be able to more easily survive. Yeah, they wouldn't have to fight for resources so much. Now, there is a character called Doctor Strange who is kind of, I guess you could say, kind of like a wizard. He can control magic and whatnot. And there's a scene where he's with Tony Stark, who is also known as Iron Man. And then there is a confrontation between him and Tony Stark, and Doctor Strange says to Tony Stark, "If it ever comes down to protecting the Infinity Stone or saving you, I will let you die without hesitation." And it's important to remember for later. The stone that he's trying to protect, it's a stone that Doctor Strange has, one of the Infinity Stones, and it controls time, and it's called the Eye of Agamotto. And so, later in the movie, Doctor Strange and Tony Stark, or Iron Man, they're preparing for a fight with Thanos, and Doctor Strange uses the Eye of Agamotto to, nerds are going to probably say that I pronounced that wrong, but anyhow, he uses that stone to look at all of the possible futures, 14 some million, I think he said, and they asked him how many of those possible futures did they win, and he said just one of them. Well, then when Thanos comes and they're fighting Thanos, Thanos is about to kill Tony Stark. And Doctor Strange tells Thanos, "If you spare his life, I will give you the Infinity Stone. No tricks." And so Thanos spares Tony Stark, and Doctor Strange gives him the Infinity Stone. Of course, Tony Stark doesn't understand why he did that, and he's upset. So Doctor Strange tells Stark that was the only way. And then, a little bit later in the movie, when Thanos gets all the rest of the Infinity Stones, and he uses his power to destroy half the galaxy, people start slowly fading away. And just before Doctor Strange fades away and dies, he says to Tony Stark, "We're in the endgame now." So Doctor Strange could see a future that Stark couldn't, and he knew that the only way they could actually win is to at least temporarily let the bad guy win. As I said before, even the wisest can't see all ends. Well, I don't know how things will turn out for the Avengers, because that's a closely guarded Marvel secret. I have some ideas, but most, if not all of them, will turn out to be wrong. But accepting the possibility that we may be wrong is the beginning of humility. Now, if we are truly humble, we would not think that we know better than God. It is when we're full of pride that we think ourselves smarter than God. Pride leads to destruction and arrogance to downfall, says Proverbs 16:8. If we don't have an attitude of "Thy will be done," then we don't trust God, and we think that we are smarter than God. If we are afraid of telling God that we are fine with His will, then we are not fine with His will. And the only reason for us not to be fine with God's will is if we think that we know better than He does. Now, a lot of times we question God, but questioning God isn't always a bad thing. It depends on how we question God, whether it's from a place of arrogance or something else. In the Bible, some people did question God, such as Habakkuk, but they approached it from a place of humility rather than arrogance. Habakkuk did not think he knew better than God, but he was having a difficult time understanding why God would allow so much suffering and why he would allow the evil to prosper. Basically, Habakkuk said, "God, I trust you and I know you're good, but I don't understand what you're doing here. Please explain it to me so that I may understand your will in all of this." God told Habakkuk that he would do amazing things, things that Habakkuk would not believe if told. But he questioned God because of all the horrible things that were happening and because the wicked were prospering. When Habakkuk questioned God, God answered, but not in the way he expected. And God said that Jerusalem would be destroyed by the Babylonians, and those who fought against it would be destroyed, but those who did not would be brought into captivity. When God answered Habakkuk's question, he urged everyone to be patient and ultimately to trust in him. "Behold, the proud one, his soul is not right within him, but the righteous will live by his faith." Habakkuk 2:4. We can see many good things that happened because of the invasion, things that Habakkuk could not see, such as the spread of the Jewish people and the creation of synagogues, which made the spreading of the gospel easier after Jesus came. See, before the Jewish people were scattered, they had only come and worship at the temple or at the tent that was made to be the temple. But that was basically the only place they'd worship. After they were all brought into captivity and scattered, they created synagogues, and after Jesus, when the apostles went and they'd start preaching, some of the first things they do is they'd go to these synagogues and talk to Jewish people and then tell them about Jesus, and that helped greatly in spreading the word. Then we come to Job. Job was just minding his own business and living according to what God had told him to do, when the Lord allowed the devil to take everything from him. Job still trusted God, though everyone he knew urged him to do exactly the opposite. But even though he trusted God and wouldn't curse God like everyone told him to do, he still argued his case to God. It says in Job 13:5, "Though he slay me, yet I will hope in him. I will surely defend my ways to his face." So basically he was saying that he would trust God, but he would keep telling God, "Hey, please don't do this to me. Do me better than this." I mean, and we can do that, you know, even if we're in a bad position. We can't get angry with God, and I guess we can, but you know, we shouldn't get angry with God. Instead, we should say, "I don't know what you're doing here, but please help me get out of it." Now, there have been a few people who argued respectfully with God and got what they wanted, though they are the exception rather than the rule. When Moses went up to the mountain to get God's law, the people decided that he had died since he'd been gone so long, and they made a golden cow to worship. They got Moses' brother Aaron to make it for them, because he used to be do that kind of work for the Egyptians when they were in captivity. Well, God was understandably angry with these foolish people. After he had done so many things for them and performed so many miracles to free them, they not only turned their back on him, they made themselves a new god. Some of the Israelites even wanted to go back to Egypt because they were afraid that Moses just took them out of the wilderness so they could die or so that he could rule over them. God told Moses that he was going to destroy the children of Israel, but Moses pleaded with God to turn from his wrath and to remember his promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God did turn from his wrath, but when Moses returned to the camp, He was a bit unhinged and threw the stone tablets, breaking them into pieces, becoming the first person to break all 10 commandments at the same time. Moses was also the first person to download data onto a tablet from a cloud. Yes, I saw a segue and decided I had to throw in a couple of jokes. Anyhow, after Moses broke the tablets, he burned the golden calf in the fire, and then he ground it to pieces, and then he mixed it with water, and he made the people drink it. Now, when Abraham learned that Sodom was about to be destroyed, he pled with God to spare the city. He asked God, if we can find 50 righteous people, will you spare the city? And God said, yes, if you can find 50 righteous people, I'll spare the city. And then he kept bringing the number down. He's like, well, if you find 40 people, will you spare the city? And what about 30? What about 20? Finally, he's like, what if you could find 10 righteous people? If you can find 10 righteous people, would you spare the city? And after all this arguing back and forth with God, God agreed. If there, you find 10 righteous people, that Sodom will be spared. Well, anyone who's familiar with the Bible knows that Sodom was in fact destroyed right along with Gomorrah. But because of this, Lot, Abraham's nephew, was spared. Another story from the Bible where a person argued successfully with God was Hezekiah, the great king of Israel. Hezekiah had done much to return the people of God. He had done much to return the people to God. After his father had led them into idolatry and ruin, Hezekiah's father was not a good king, and he about ruined the people and introduced all kind of idol worship. But Hezekiah tried to get them to follow God. He made some poor choices as well, but he did do a lot to get the people back to God. When Isaiah came to Hezekiah and told him that he was about to die and that he needed to get his house in order, he wept and he prayed and he begged God to allow him to live longer. God granted Hezekiah's request and allowed him to live 15 more years. Most of the time when we argue with God, we don't get what we ask for, partially because we are approaching it from a place of pride instead of a place of humility, but also because what we are asking for is not in God's will. In order to truly believe that God, is all he says he is, and that he's smarter than us, we have to accept his will as final, even when he denies our request or gives us something other than what we wanted. In the past, I have thought that if I were God, I would have prevented all the wars, all the murders, all the suffering, all the rape, all the child abuse, all the diseases, all the natural disasters, and all other methods of death and destruction and torment. But any time I think I would have done things differently, I am basically saying that I'm smarter than God or that I know better than God does. Sometimes I think about what I would do if I were God, and then I think of some of my less flattering character traits, and I realize what a horrible God I would be, and I'm glad that I am not, as I'm sure everyone else is as well. I drove a bus for nearly 12 years, and on the top of my list of places that I hated to drive in was Chicago, Illinois. Oh, I really hate that place, as far as driving. On one of my many, many trips to Chicago, I had just been cut off by a taxicab for about the 30th time in the space of about a block, and I was furious. Chicago cabbies drive so horribly that it's a miracle that they don't have an astronomical death rate. I think that it's mostly due to the fact that everyone assumes the cabs are going to do something incredibly stupid and dangerous that there aren't more cab-related accidents. Pretty much every bus driver who's ever driven in Chicago agrees with the statement that where they say, you know what, you call 500 taxi cabs in Lake Michigan, a good start. Well, anyhow, on that particular day, I almost made a hood ornament out of a taxi cab, as a 45-foot bus can't stop on a dime. And I thought to myself, if I were God, I would immediately and irrevocably send every single taxicab driver to the lowest depths of hell. The scary thing is that at the time I actually meant it, and if I'd had the power of God, I would have done it without a second thought. Thinking back on it, I'm ashamed of myself. There are a lot of things that secure a person's spot in hell, but I doubt that poor driving is one of them. God doesn't send us to hell because we're a terrible driver or for any of the other reasons that we think people should go to hell for. Though knowingly hurting people with your vehicle, either through negligence, intoxication, or intentionally using your vehicle as a weapon, likely makes a person a good candidate for a new resident in a hot place. While I'm on the subject of taxicabs, I heard a joke a while back where there was a preacher and a taxicab driver who went to heaven at the same time. And the cabbie was given the best of everything. You know, he's given the best room and the best amenities and just top of the line. The preacher, however, was given the standard package. The preacher complained about it, and he mentioned how many things he'd done and talked about how he spent his entire life in the service of God. So St. Peter said, "Well, we judged based on the results. While you preached, everyone slept. But while he drove, everyone prayed." Of course, there's no scriptural justification for this type of setup in heaven, but then again, it's just a joke. There are all sorts of things which we think that we're smarter than God on. And some of those are the rules God has given us. God gives us rules for society, and we make alternate rules we think that we know better than God. To almost every rule God gives us in the Bible, someone has come up with an alternate rule. Have you ever noticed that regardless of the rule or the law, be it from God, society, or work, there is always at least a few people who think they are the exception to that rule? There has been a lot of talk lately about alternate facts and alternate truths, but something is either a fact or it isn't, and something is either true or it's a lie, which I hope to dedicate an entire episode to in the future. But if we make alternate rules, alternate to those that God has given us, then we either don't trust God, think we're smarter, or we are willingly disregarding God's rule in open rebellion against Him. There are all sorts of alternate rules in society, especially lately. People think that God's laws are outdated and no longer relevant, and many of the people who change or negate God's rules claim to be Christian and claim to be doing a good job at it. Those people who are trying to change or to go around God's rules are like the intern who is just lucky to be there and yet thinks that he or she is smarter than the president of the company and wishes to change rules that have been in place in the company for hundreds of years. Some of these safety rules are just so outdated, they say, and what does it matter if we aren't hurting anyone? As they say in the military, mistakes cost lives. Well, whenever we don't follow God's rules, there are consequences. And those rules aren't put in place because God wants to be a killjoy. He puts them in place because He wants to protect us. When we try to change the laws of God, or go around those rules, or get rid of the rules, we are saying in a big way that we're smarter than God. Some people openly and proudly proclaim their superior wisdom and knowledge to the outdated God. Other people are not so bold and deny that they think or claim they are smarter than God, but they think they are all the same. When God gives us rules, they are not suggestions like the Pirate's Code. For those of you who have not seen the Pirates of the Caribbean, you don't know what I'm talking about. For those who have seen it, you do. But I'll explain for those of you who haven't actually seen the movie. In the first movie, The Curse of the Black Pearl, Elizabeth Swan, the governor's daughter, is captured by pirates, and before they can harm her, she says, "Parley," which means that they can't harm her, and they have to take her to their captain. After meeting Captain Barbossa, the captain of the Black Pearl, and negotiating with him, Swan says that he has to honor his agreement because of the Pirate's Code. In response, Captain Barbossa says that, in order for the Pirate's Code to apply, she must be a pirate, which she wasn't. And then he said that the Pirate's Code was more of a guideline than an actual rule. Well, God's rules are not mere guidelines, but sometimes society goes farther than making them guidelines and says that they don't apply at all. Often people think they know more than God, and they throw out God's rules and make their own. They make their own rules that are more politically correct. I recently read an opinion piece that made the claim that it isn't enough that we love the sinner, that we also have to love all of the activities that we or the Bible consider to be sin if they are an integral part of the person's identity. Please don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that all sins are equal, but I have to wonder what they would say about a person who identifies as a white supremacist, or a rapist, or a serial killer, and that was an integral part of their identity. Would they still say that we had to love those behaviors in order to love the person? Other times, we think we are smarter than God because he puts us into a place or a circumstance, and when he later wants to move us, we question his judgment and think our wisdom reigns supreme and that our plan to stay put is better than God's plan to move us. Just because God put you in a place or a situation doesn't mean that he wants you to stay there forever. Some of the places or events God leads us to are just stepping stones, and if we don't have the faith to follow him into the unknown, then we will miss out on the great things he has planned for us. We say that we trust God, but we are afraid to give up our safety blanket. We have all known children who would refuse to give up their comfort or security item, be it a blanket or a teddy bear or whatever it is. And when we refuse to give up our security item or security place or whatever it is, and trust God, that is the adult equivalent of a child clinging to the security blanket for dear life. As I mentioned earlier, I drove a bus for nearly 12 years, and due to the multitude of circumstances and events that have come about through it, I have no doubt that God wanted me to drive a bus. However, when the time came to move on, I was a bit hesitant. Now, even after not driving a bus for almost 3 years and knowing that I made the right decision, I insisted on maintaining my commercial driver's license, just in case. Just in case I'm not sure, but just in case all the same. A few months ago, I received a letter from the state telling me that I had to renew my DOT physical, or my license would be downgraded to a regular operator license. And for those of you who have never, who don't know much about commercial driver's license, it's a federal regulation in the United States that you have to take an annual physical, and the doctor will determine if you are in good enough condition to drive a commercial vehicle, and then you have to give the state a copy of that physical, and if you let it expire, then they will downgrade your license to a regular license. Now, even though I no longer needed a CDL, I planned on renewing the physical to keep my license. I figured I'd always have it to have something to fall back on. But I'd been so busy lately that I actually forgot. Now, when I was driving commercially, my employer would schedule me a visit to renew the physical and would not only pay for it, but would also have me do it on company time. But now that I'm not driving commercially, it was up to me, and I forgot. About a week ago, I received another letter from the state, this time informing me that my license had been downgraded and that I could no longer legally drive a commercial vehicle. Even though I could not think of a single compelling reason why I needed to maintain my CDL, I was instantly hit with a wave of regret and fear, and even broke out into a cold sweat, worrying. Logically, I knew that if I ever wanted to drive a commercial again, I could get another CDL. But fear overtook me. What if, I asked. What if what? Was I really asking, what if God let me down, and I had to do it all on my own? I think I was. Shame on me. I have compelling reasons to believe that God wanted me to move to Missouri and to move on from bus driving. And if I keep trying to go back to what was before, then I am not trusting God, I am trusting myself. In a movie called A Long Way Down, which in my opinion is a phenomenal movie, four strangers meet by chance on the rooftop of a tall building when they all pick the same night to commit suicide. Relax now, nobody killed themselves. Though each of the four gained three new friends. Later on in the movie, the four go on vacation together to try to get away from the press that's chasing them all the time. And one of the four, a lady named Maureen, wants to bail on the vacation and on the group and to return to her old life, when a young man in the group named JJ reminds her that her old life wasn't that good, especially since it made her want to end it all. We as humans sometimes have the overwhelming desire to run back to what was comfortable and familiar, or to run to something new, thinking that it will solve our problems. Sometimes we desperately want to run when God wants us to stay right where we are, and when we don't immediately see the reasons behind it, we get impatient and complain, or consider ditching God's plan and substituting one of our own instead. In the Bible, a man named Gideon was approached by an angel and was called Mighty Man of Valor. At that point, do you know what Gideon had done to earn that title? Not a single thing. Gideon, by the way, is the only person the Bible ever calls Mighty Warrior or Mighty Man of Valor. Not even the great King David earned that title. Gideon was chosen to defeat the Midianites, and when he was gathering his army, God told him that he had too many men. Gideon wound up taking the Midian army with a force of only 300. And they won the battle by shouting and throwing their clay jars on the ground during the night, which caused the Midianites to flee. Now, how Gideon chose which men to take, God gave him a test and said, take all the men down to the river and have them drink water. And basically the men that drank water in a manner that they kept their eyes out for enemies were the ones who were to choose, and the rest of them were to stand home. And the reason God did it that way, the reason God had him only take a small number, is God wanted him to know that it was God that won the battle for him, that they didn't win the battle. Now, Gideon trusted God, but what if he hadn't? The outcome would have been much different. Now, I no longer remember the name of the story or who wrote it, but I once heard a story of a Marine company that had been sent to an enemy camp, and the major in charge of the company was told to leave his men at the ready at the ridge overlooking the camp at 0500. But he was to wait until precisely 0510 to enter the camp. When the troops showed up at 0458, the major saw that the enemy was sleeping, so he decided that if he waited, one of his men might accidentally make a sound and they would lose the element of surprise. So he ordered his men into the camp while he remained on the ridge. The Marines bravely went into the enemy camp and did what Marines do best, but at exactly 0500, heavy artillery fire opened up from somewhere on the other side of the camp, killing the enemy and the Marines alike. The major was horrified, but there was nothing he could do. When the artillery stopped, the major looked at his watch, and it was exactly 0510. Realizing he had sent his men to their death, the major cried, "I didn't know what the general knew." God knows what we don't, and he tells us to do or not to do things, not just because. He always has a good reason, and when we fail to listen, there are always consequences, sometimes disastrous. Sometimes people like to tell God what to do, but telling God what to do is the spiritual equivalent of being a backseat driver, and a backseat driver who doesn't actually know how to drive. You ever see those bumper stickers that read, "God is my pilot"? They're quite popular. So that if God is actually your pilot, then you should stop telling him how to fly the plane. When you don't trust God's timing, and when you don't trust God's rules, when you choose your own plan over God's plan, when you put God on the back burner to secular reasoning, and you think you are smarter than God. Galatians 6:7 says, "Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows." God loves each and every one of us and wants us to return to him, but he will not force us if we choose to go somewhere other than heaven, and he will not drag us there crying and screaming any more than a parent would force feed ice cream to their child or children. Thanks for listening, and God bless. I will catch you next episode. Thanks for listening to the Recovering Faith Podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe so you never miss an episode. A new episode goes live every Wednesday. If you have questions, comments, have suggestions for a future episode, or if you would like to be a guest, you can contact me through my website, genecurl.com. Remember, it's gene, like the unit of biological heredity, and curl, like a curl on your head. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or whichever streaming service you use. God bless you, and keep you till the next episode.